everyone. Welcome to the Market Pack, the live podcast series where leadership and product marketing intersect. The Market Tech is brought to you by my friends at the Compete Network. This isn't any, you know, in-kind partnership. I have to give a special shout out to Adam, Grayson, Andrew, Katie over at the Compete Network for all your support in making this happen. My peeps, I love you guys. Thank you. And now I also have to do a warm welcome to my new co-host. First time ever in Market Tech history, we have a co-host. His name is Morgan Jam Master Jay Ingram. Some of you may know him as the 81-time LinkedIn top sales voice guy and an influencer to the millions and millions on LinkedIn. My number is, you know, maybe a tad off here, but to me, he's Morgan. He's my buddy who started from the bottom as an SDR, but now he's here as the founder and CEO of AMP, helping sales and marketing folks with B2B content. And frankly, he's a representative of a key stakeholders of product marketing sales. He's bringing that angle to the show to keep us product marketing leaders and CMOs in check. Morgan, my man, welcome.
Thank you. That's the best intro. I'm not even kidding that I've ever had. 81 times. That's pretty great since it's longer than I've been alive. So it means I'm doing something well. So I'm happy to be here. Excited.
All right. And now let's get to it. So we are also blessed to be sitting with three go-to-market experts who are going to really help us understand what separates winning companies from less successful ones. To be frank, creating products is easy enough, but building a robust go-to-market strategy for that product, it's a whole new ballgame. There's so much confusion around what a modern go-to-market is and the role of the CMO and product marketing leader in developing and executing against that GTM strategy. And that's why Morgan and I, we thought long and hard, who are we going to invite to the first episode to set the foundation? And it was conclusive. Sangram, the GTM guru out of Hotlanta, who founded the world's first advisory firm dedicated to GTM. Thank you for doing that. Much needed. Yi Lin, the queen of helping us product marketers have courageous careers. You see what I did there? And finally, Trinity, a rising rock star for CMO. Her title is VP Marketing. User Gem Twits. Hey, make her CMO. She acts as a CMO. She is your CMO. She is a product marketing individual in her former life, and she is the gem at User Gems. Welcome, everyone.
Wow, this is wrong. You're killing it, man.
I was just saying, this intro is crazy.
Good. I'm done. This is recorded, so that's good. Everybody's going to take a recording of the postcard for their own personal, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling everyone, it has to be that intro that you did. Otherwise, I'm not going to show up anymore.
Listen, I admire you guys so much. You deserve that. Anything less would be, wouldn't do you justice. But so we're going to cover three things today. Again, we're going to set the stage for what is modern GTM. There shouldn't be much ambiguity about what it is anymore after the tons of work that Sangram and his firm have put into providing a data-driven, disciplined response to what, you know, GTM should be. Then we're going to cover the role of our audience, which is the CMO and the product marketing leader. What should they be doing in this modern GTM? And finally, we're going to end with some real-life examples of modern go-to-market motions. What's worked? What hasn't worked? And along the way to our audience, this is live, in the chat group, ask away any questions you may have for any of these three. Please don't be shy. Let's get to it. Morgan, what is your take on go-to-market?
Yeah, before I do that, this is something really important, Ron, that you have to understand. Don't ever call Atlanta Hot Atlanta. That is actually not, that's, you don't want to do that. I'm protecting you. If you ever go to Atlanta, say Hot Atlanta, people will look at you some type of way. I'm just trying to help you out. Before we get into the content, you need to know that first. I just got to give you some context. Same, we can agree with you. You got to be careful. You got to be careful.
My 90s hip hop references. And so Jermaine Dupri told me it was Hotlanta. Look, I'm calling it Hotlanta.
Everybody outside of Atlanta calls it Hotlanta. Nobody inside.
Yeah. Don't trust Jermaine Dupri. He's going to put you in a bad spot. All right. I'm just trying to help you out. All right. So that's that advice. Now let's get to the go to market side. So my answer is coming from the context of training tons of organizations in high tech growth software on top of the funnel, and then seeing how that pipeline goes into close and how they worked with marketing and product as well to make sure sales messaging was on point. So when I think of it today, right, I think of it as soccer, or if we have international people watching, football. I'm not trying to get called out. So the thing is that when you think of go-to-market, it truly is like soccer, because in order to score, you have to play as a team. It's not based on just one player. Now, there obviously are standout players, Messi, Ronaldo, etc. But even if they're on a team that does not know the passing, they don't have good defense, there's not a good goalkeeper, it's going to be very difficult for them to win the game. And so when I think of go-to-market, that's what I'm thinking about. Like, sales, marketing, product marketing, customer success have to all work together to give them the right signals and intent to be successful. If the customer success team is not telling you what the great use cases are so that sales can use it in their sales calls and prospecting, it's not going to land with the prospect. And if the sales team is, I've seen this before, not selling the right stuff to customer success, then the retention is going to be low, right? So there's so many things here that come into play. And so when I think of the modern GTM, it's how do you play together within your strengths, leveraging those insights with each other and speaking in communication. And that's exactly what they do when it comes to soccer, is they're playing together so they can score that goal.
And beautiful. I love that. Sangro, I would love your take. And I love when you said to me when you're first writing your book, this is not a plug, it's a book that I love and that I read quite often. And just to make sure you don't think I'm bullshitting you here, it's by my side at all times. You say GTM is not a strategy. It's more than that. So if it's not a project, if it's not a strategy, what is GTM?
This was the conversation that I had with Brian Halligan, the CEO of HubSpot at that time. And I still remember very clearly when I asked him, like, well, how do you define go-to-market? And he was one of the 50 people we interviewed, especially people who have started their companies from zero to $1 billion. Like, you got to know what go-to-market is. Like, and you got to have a view of how you're defining it. And I still remember he took a minute, he thought about it, he looked a couple of different directions, and then he just said, look, it's a transformational process. And I was digging into it, and he said, look, when companies make decision, should we invest more in marketing or sales? They're making a go-to-market decision. When a company makes a decision if they want to open an office in EMEA or stay in North America or another location, that's a go-to-market decision. If you are making a decision between acquiring a company or, you know, putting more money into your existing product, that's a go-to-market decision. So when you start thinking about it, it really comes down to there's a lot of decisions that you do are actually truly go-to-market decisions. And a lot of times people misrepresent go-to-market as a sales-only thing, that we're going to go do this thing, or a product launch because we have a new product. And we minimize the actual importance of the whole idea of go-to-market. Go-to-market is how you run your business. And it can be when you go on an offsite and you said that's just a strategy and that's just an overall plan where it is. But it's iterative. It's every day. You're making 8 to 10 new decisions around go-to-market. And that, honestly, for me, I thought I knew and understood go-to-market after my days at Pardot and Salesforce and Terminus. I felt like I became a student that day. I'm like, oh my gosh, I had such a myopic view of go-to-market, which was very functional because of my experience. And he just expanded my vision around it. Like, well, no, go-to-market is so much more bigger, so much more important. And we all struggle to understand that, which is why we struggle as companies, because we get siloed in our own ways, as opposed to thinking about it as a holistic transformation process. And he was very intentional about using those words. It's transformational, because if it's not transformational, it is not going to change the business. It has to have a transformative impact. And the second part is it's a process. which means it's not a destination. You don't get there. It's not one and done. It's not a marketing, sales, CS. It is a process. You continue to iterate on it. And that to me was super inspiring.
And so then if it's a transformational process, like what are some of the telltale signs that you've seen that someone is treating GTM other than it being a transformational process?
Well, when this happens all the time, hey, we're not getting enough leads. Who is responsible for it? Marketing, get me more leads. You know, don't you have them, you know, buried around the corner on the other street? And that's a telltale sign that you're looking at it myopic, like marketing is the solution to a go-to-market problem, probably because maybe the market has shifted. Maybe the customers have looking at it different. Maybe the category is different. Or like sales, you're not closing more deals. We all are seeing that right now. Like, fire the sales team. That has solved all problems in the world, right? No, it never happens. You invest more and then you spend more. And then every 6 months, you bring a new sales leader to just do rah-rah and it doesn't do anything. Same thing with like, oh, we're losing customers. Man, the CS team sucks. Like, we got all these junior people who don't know what they do. You hire people who have been there, done that, and then you go. So it's all of these are telltale signs of looking at this problem as a functional problem. And the day somebody could say in marketing, I'm going to change salespeople's compensation, or salespeople say, I'm going to change marketing, the day people can do that, then you can be in your silos. But until that point, we are all in this together. It's a problem, and go-to-market is just better together.
Beautiful. Elin, Trinity, your take on modern GTM.
Yeah, I'm happy to take a crack at it right now. And I will say, like, 100% agree with what Morgan and Sangram has already mentioned. And I love the soccer analogy. I grew up watching football growing up in different countries.
Yeah, yeah, there we go. I'm going to the European Cup, so it's I'm excited.
Yeah, I think you were spot on there because it is a team sport. And I think to be more specific, the way how I view it is it's an entire business strategy on how you bring your product and service to market to the right customers so that they can buy them. And I think the emphasis on the right customers for me is really important as a product marketer, because so many times we hear people just, you know, companies going after a lot of different people, right? And saying, oh, we need to take over this entire market. But I believe having strong focus is really, really key to success and succeeding in, especially in the early stages of launching a go-to-market strategy. And I think the second follow-up question you asked was about what is not go-to-market, right? Like, again, I totally agree. It's not individual functions. It's not sales, or it's not marketing. It's not product. But also, it's not a product launch. As a product marketer, I think Sangram, you mentioned, I coach people on a daily basis, and that is the biggest confusion. Is a product marketer thinks a product launch is the same as a go-to-market, but really it's a subset of a go-to-market. A go-to-market is much broader and includes things like what you said, entering new markets, even repackaging, pricing, right? Introducing different tiers and things like that. So I think it's really important to have that distinction.
Wow, beautiful. The moment you just said about product marketer, I'm a former product marketer.
I know that. I was so excited.
I didn't know, like, Rowan, I don't know if you knew that, but... I was like, wow, what a coincidence.
It's my great planning. We speak up for each other.
Yeah. But, you know, when you said that, like, product marketer thinks that their job is about product launches or go-to-market is a product launches, my heart just stopped right there. I'm like, you say what? I don't know if you caught my face. I'm very expressive. I was like, whoa. We need to have a conversation. And I agree with you. It's a whole entire spectrum from strategic to very tactical, like sales enablement. So it's like, just have to comment on that piece. But Sangram, like what you shared about the quote from Brian and about the transformation, it actually hits a couple. Like it feels, I'm here to kind of learn from you guys, and I can reflect on that too. It's the point where you said it's every time we make a decision, like imagine you go to leadership offsite and you're like, oh, we got to do this, we got to do that. Every single decision, if we say yes as a group, ultimately will define our GTM motion. And that, I don't know if anyone's like listening right now, feel it, but I thought that is so critical. There are so many X-led growth these days, inbound, outbound, allbound, nearbound, like you name it, right? This region, that region, let's AI-ify everything. And every decision is going to have a GTM implication. And sometimes we don't think about it as even as a leadership group. So I think that is I think that hits home for me, where I want to talk to my team, make sure that my leadership team, and say, have we thought through, like, if we want to do this, have we thought through the GTM? How does it impact pre-sales, post-sales, the lifecycle experience? And then how does it impact our positioning and differentiator as well? So that piece is awesome. But I just echo you guys. It's a team sport, beginning to end.
You know, I was going to say, and it's so refreshing to hear you say that, especially from a leadership level, because I think it's not even just a team sport. It's a team sport that starts at the top, right? Because I think a lot of times, even I have been tapped when I was just a director level, or somebody just say, hey, Elin, I want your team to help just figure out this new market opportunity, and we do something on the side. It's like a siloed thing, right? And I'm like, well, what about the rest of the organization? Are they aware of this, right? Like, what about customer success? How are we even going to deploy this thing, right? So I feel like a lot of times it's been siloed, and it's been down maybe at the sort of mid-level or even like ground level, but not at the leadership level. And I think if the leaders are not talking to each other, there's no way it's going to trickle down and have a successful go-to-market.
Oh, what a fantastic, so well said, fantastic jumping off point, not planned, to my next question, which is, Sangram, you've seen GTM owned by many functional leaders. Who should own GTM at a SaaS company?
You need to buy my book, and then you'll find it.
Drop the link, affiliate.
that is, honestly, wasn't the second shocking thing for me. So every CEO, and Brian was one of them, and then Nick Mehta from Gainsight, to we talked to a whole bunch, like Henry from ZoomInfo, across the board. Every CEO we interviewed, without blinking, without taking a moment, they said, I own it. And it is like across the board. And I remember Brian specifically was mentioning I only, as a CEO, own three things. Number one, I own the vision for the company. I have to continue to say where we're going to everybody, partners, customers, employees, everybody. The second thing is culture. I need to own to make sure that we are hiring the right people. If you don't have that, no matter how great the product is, not going to go anywhere. And then number three, he says, for which I get no credit, is go to market. And I remember asking, and again, digging into that, well, if you're saying you own go to market, does that mean that the buck stops at you, kind of thing, because it stops at the CEO? He's like, no, it actually means that I own, because nobody can make the decisions sometimes around go to market, because it is not, to both Elin and Trinity, your point is, it's not a transactional decision. It has a lot of implications if you start thinking about it. So it's not saying that every decision has to come to him, but the overarching, the organization has to understand the implications of go to market decisions. And a lot of times those decisions, when made in silo, will have a very big impact on the business. But here's the flip part of it. This was the most fun part, and I would never reveal the names of the companies that I asked this, and I got a different response on this. Every time I would ask a CMO or the CMO of similar companies, that's how I would keep it. They said, oh, I think I own it. I think the CRO said, or I think the director of so-and-so owns it, or the head of product marketing owns it. And there lies the confusion and the big irony of the whole situation. Every CEO of every company made to it said they own it, but they haven't defined it and articulated it to a level where the team understands that they own it, what part of this they own it. And the team has this, their own version of if I own sales, I own go to market, or if I own product now, I own. And so there is that confusion around it. That is why we're in the mess that I feel sometimes you're in.
I think that's a really good call out. And one thing I actually want to go back to is, Trini, you were talking about how, I don't know if you were saying everyone has to agree to the decision, or you were just saying that you collaborate on it. But when you are making these go-to-market decisions, how does it work? So let's say you have an idea in marketing. Are you going to customer success first? You have a conversation with them, then sales? Is it a collective meeting? I'm assuming it depends on how big it is, but I'm curious on how that works. And if someone's like, no, I don't like this at all, how do you have that conversation?
Yeah, no, usually it's made within the leadership. And I kind of want to go back to a point that Elin made a bit earlier. So talking about the CEOs, I think in my mind, the CEO does own the go-to-market, because that kind of a forcing function. You have a vision, but then you need to know how to make that vision real, right? And then for us, we think the leadership team is the first team. I didn't come up with this. I heard this from Sam Jacobs, where like VP of sales or like CRO, CMO, CCO, all that. Like that is our team. And so when we make decisions, we make it together. Yes, we do have our own like teams that we're managing. Ultimately, the first team is us to each other, because that's how you can kind of like go top-down alignment. So when we make any kind of like GTM bets or decision, that team needs to be aligned on. If there are disagreements, we usually kind of like step back and see, like, is there any value in there? How big is the risk? And are we willing to make that educated bet at this point, knowing that, like, going in there, knowing that the risk is there, but the benefit could outweigh that. So, like, we kind of like have that conversation a lot, and usually it would take a few weeks and just the team together and figure it out. And sometimes, like running a team, like sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Within the team, kind of your opinions, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes like the sales team, I know that our sales team will forego deals just because based on the input from the CS side, we know that these customers won't be like a healthy LTV. And then some other times we see that like this head of CS would say like, I know this is a risk based on all the indicators they have right now, but I know like we need to hit that certain number. And also we want to push ourselves and the CS as a CS team and also our product team willingly taking on this cohort of clients and spend extra TLC there and learn from them and see, can we make them successful? Because if we can, willing to take this risk, that means we're opening up our TAM a bit. So there's always that kind of trade-off.
And Yilong, what's your take? Who owns GTM?
I fully agree with Trinity. I think the CEO has to be the owner of go-to-market, because it drives go-to-market. It drives ultimately the business strategy. And if you're not aligned at the top and the CEO is not driving it, I do not see momentum, right, or alignment in how the GTM is going to move forward. But it does not mean the CEO is the person who is like, I say this, it's my way or the highway. Because then it creates a problem, right? Then you're basically not actually being a CEO, because your job is to enable other teams to succeed, because that's where you trust your VPs of marketing, sales, and whatever, all of them to work together to deliver on it. So I feel like, yes, the CEO is the person who is ultimately the owner of the go-to-market, but is not the person controlling all the decisions, but rather the enabler of that.
Interesting. So I think we're all in agreement here that the CEO owns GTM for a company. If that is the case, Sangram, what is the role of the CMO? And, you know, typically under the CMO, their right hand is the head of product marketing. What is the role of marketing in go-to-market then?
Well, in marketing has to fundamentally change from the historic way it has been in most organizations. I sincerely feel, and this will be a very spirited conversation to hear from both Eli and Trinity, like Morgan, from your perspective, from a sales perspective as well. I feel, and I have been saying this quite a bit, is the fact that over a period of time, I as a marketer, we as a marketing profession has really become great at marketing the business. Meaning we're really good at campaigns, really good at activities, really good at lead tracking, trying to get MQLs and SQLs and dashboards to show all the great work we're doing, tracking anonymous and non-anonymous everybody, like, you know, who stopped by the bit. So we've really gotten good at this idea of marketing the business as a profession. But along the way, I feel like we have lost the business of marketing, the art of business of marketing, which fundamentally means that I understand what the business is about. So my marketing needs to shift, not based on the skill set that I have of writing great content or creating great graphics or doing great events, but actually recognizing that the business is changing and it's constantly changing. And as a marketer, am I adjusting to the new ways of it, where I have to leave all the other stuff that I kind of thought was marketing, but maybe that's not working. Maybe I knew how to do big events. I need to transfer that and do small events, because that's where the real deals are getting made. And that's where the psychology of the sellers are right now. Maybe instead of creating white papers and all the stuff that I've always done, a great writer, maybe I need to change that and to get into AI and start doing something very differently than that. I think as a profession, we fundamentally have to be challenged and start from ground level zero and get away from just marketing the business, SEO, pay-per-click, and all that stuff, to like, do I truly understand the business of marketing so that I can actually start making those bets and adjustments in my profession. I feel that viscerally every day. I don't know how you know, Trinity or Elon, you feel as a professor, as a professional in it.
Professor?
You professor, no, not you.
I think that name from Sixth Sense said that it's not a chief marketing officer, it's a chief market officer. And I think that resonates a lot. So the CEO can own the go-to-market, but as a CMO, I feel like the marketing leaders are the voice of the market. We monitor the market. We understand what's going on in the market, not just the space we're in, but also the competitiveness within it and the adjacents. And then beneath that, with understanding the persona, has there been any change in the persona mix and going like the interest in our use case, et cetera? So we kind of like represent the market needs and trends to inform the leadership team and the CEO and the board on this is why we should go in this direction with this GTM motion, et cetera, et cetera.
I love that. And I really like the market, the focus on market and not marketing. I think that's a really good distinction that you made there. And I definitely have a very similar view. I will share my similar view and I'll share a controversial viewpoint.
Thank you very much. There we go. I mean, it's some controversy.
So I think absolutely. And I, as a product marketer, which I know you also are, like to me, the product marketing piece really comes in because ultimately we're helping the company and the business to understand and answer three key questions. Number one is who do we target, right? Because if you don't know who to target, forget about it. So that means understanding the customer and the market. What are the unique segments that we need to target? What are these ICP and the personas to exactly the point you were talking about, right? And then the second thing is, well, what do they actually care and why should they care about you? And that goes into the positioning and messaging we need to present and discuss with them, right? So this is where the messaging, the value props, and the storytelling comes in. And then the last piece is, how do we reach them? So this is where product marketing may not play the largest role in terms of channel strategies and whatnot, but they're the enablers for other marketing functions like demand gen and content so that they can produce the best campaigns, enablement assets and whatnot in order to reach the customers where they are. So that's sort of like how I see in terms of like the three key pillars of product marketing. Now, my controversial take is that does it mean a product marketer can only do that under the marketing function? I don't think so. And the more I've been thinking about it, I think it really depends on the business structure of the company, what type of business it is. And depending on that, it may not be a marketing function. It could be something that goes into product with sales, or it could be something that is independent of all of that, because ultimately I see it as a business strategist function. And I've seen it more and more where it's actually replacing or duplicating roles of traditional BizOp teams, right? Or corporate strategy teams, because it has a broader view on all the different teams, right? When you talk about product marketing, you're really enabling product marketing, CS, sales, and all of those teams. So it's one of the more unique organizations. But at the same time, I think also that's where people have trouble or challenge with understanding how to measure success and do this job well, because you can be spread super thin. And I think that's the identity crisis a product marketer goes through in their journey, that I think is just the structure is just not set up to enable them to be highly successful. So I'll stop there.
Interesting. And I'm curious. So if we're saying the CMO with their right hand, the product marketer, or in some cases, if the product marketing function may not even reside in marketing. And that's a whole new episode, different episode, different conversation. I have a perspective on that, but I completely understand where you're coming from, Yilin. So then if the CEO owns the go-to-market, the CMO and the head of product marketing, what are those tangible and intangible qualities, characteristics that they need to develop to be able to excel in this role to drive this modern go-to-market? I'll open up to everyone. Yilin, you kind of touched on some of it by saying, you know, first you have to understand who are you serving? And so there's a lot of research, a lot of analytical, there's analysis needed. There's empathy needed from a listening to your customers and prospects and your sales reps who are on your front lines. But that's just to kick it off. But by all means, what is your takes of a CMO and PMM leader characteristic, what do they need to excel here in this modern GTM?
Yeah, I think just to add on a couple of things from what I said there, just to complete my train of thought, I absolutely agree. It's, to me, it's customer centricity is super important, like being able to really focus on the needs of the customer and think from first principles instead of like I've been there, done that kind of thing. Second piece related, you've touched on also, is sort of this combination of art and science, right? Like the poet and quant. And that's kind of what drew me into product marketing, not to sort of toot my own horn, but I was a consultant. I was a civil engineering consultant. So I was very, very quantitative, analytical, and did data analysis every day. But what I really missed was a creative side, right? Which is what I decided to do to become a product marketer. And I think to be a great product marketer is not just like great storytelling, which is important, but also being able to analyze data, analyze market insights, and then pulling out the threads from that to inform strategy and insights, right? And then with that, then you can create strong positioning messaging and inform better business decisions to power the rest of organization. Personally, I have coached quite a bit of product marketers. The best product marketers I have worked with, they basically go beyond the literal definition of product marketing, like, oh, creating collaterals, right? Like, doing this, just launching a product, and they start using insights to inform the rest of the business. They basically grew out of the product marketing container and just became an important member of the entire company. They are like the go-to person for insights. So I know it's a very broad definition, but I felt like that's what I've seen as like the best patterns of a product marketer.
Trendy, I'm curious for your take on.
My take, we have PMM or like aspiring PMM on the call that has like the whole different spectrum of career and experience, right? So one thing I really like about the product marketing role, and Yilin touched on this, is it's a very unique function. I remember when I became a PMM a decade ago, it wasn't a real role or function. It's kind of like always embedded somewhere. But there's this framework that anyone who talked to me and they want to become a PMM, I highly recommend checking out. And it's not new. It's a Pragmatic Institute for Product Marketing. And there's this chart, and to this day, I still think it's valid. And it's like, it looks like a chemistry, like table with like all kinds of boxes in it. And it goes from left to right. And then one on the left side is very tactical, like kind of like doing sales enablement, creating collaterals, doing sales training, or speaking at like trade show. And then like somewhere in between is a product launch. And then they go a little bit to the right, and it's like positioning, messaging, and pricing and packaging. So it becomes a little bit more strategic and more like company-wide impact. And all the way to the end is like market research, competitive, like setting the product roadmap. So I feel like for PMM on the call, I think depending where, if you're interested in this past, look into your past experience, where your strengths are at, because I can say with like 90% confidence that your skills and your strengths will fit into one of these boxes. And as long as you can think from first principle, like Yilin mentioned, that means just like don't copy playbooks anywhere. Just think like what makes sense for my business. And then have the curiosity, because it's so broad that you at some point going to work with marketing partners or like sales partners or CS partners, you name it. So as long as that curiosity maintains, you're going to figure out the rest. So you don't have to like cover the entire spectrum. Just figure out like where's your entry point and go left and right depending on your interests, skill sets, and the business needs. And I think that's it. That's it.
Yeah. No, I think that's an excellent answer. And I feel like that will give a lot of people clarity on what they can do moving forward. And I want to move to Sangram and ask you this question. And everyone else can chime in once we hear the commentary here. Is we've been talking a lot about the different roles, how they play, and things of that nature. Sangram, for you and all these conversations you're having with CEOs and other executives, who are like the key stakeholders when it comes to modern GTM? And then can you like define those roles across the board?
Well, first of all, if I ever have to get in another marketing and sales alignment meeting, I'm going to be...
Wait, don't you love those? Those are great.
No, don't say that. We have weekly. I love it.
Well, now Trini's going to remove it. She's going to blame you, Sangram.
Somebody saying, here's my numbers and here's your number. Manage it. Somebody didn't update the data. It's just like a nightmare. Right? I remember being in meetings where like first 20 minutes is just who stole my cheese is the conversation. then you're getting into the business of it. So it's like, you know, I think the first and foremost, I feel like the role of a RevOps type leader is critical for a for a true go-to-market meeting, because they need to be away from, they can't be sitting in the sales team or the marketing team. They need to be reporting into the CFO or CEO or CDO and giving a business view. They're probably the closest to answering the most defined question of the from the beginning of time, which is, if I give you a dollar, where should I invest? You tell, ask a marketer, they're going to say, marketing, or but you give that to a RevOps person, they would be looking at it and saying, and I've heard it so many times, well, like, oh, maybe you should invest in enablement, maybe we should invest in training, maybe we'd, like, so you will get to a proper answer when you have the right thing. So one is, a go-to-market meeting without a RevOps type person is really a mess, a big mess. And I see things like people are changing the names. And the other part is, like, you need to change the name of the meeting. If it is a sales and marketing meeting, it is a sales and marketing meeting. It is never going to be a go-to-market meeting. So literal words have the power of life and death. So we have to use the right words in order for people to come in into that meeting as a business leader who happen to be specializing in marketing, who happen to be specialized in sales. So in order to create that environment, I think having somebody RevOps type showing the dashboard and telling that this is the truth, this is what we know, these are the gaps, and now as a team, as business leaders, we need to figure out how we're going to solve for it. So the right exchange of conversation. So you can have marketing, sales, and the standard people in it, but I think the big miss a lot of times people have is this: they want to talk about go to market, but they very quickly come down to the nuts and bolts of, like, where are my leads and why deals are moving, as opposed to having a much more strategic conversation, which a RevOps type person should help clarify, is that, guys, our tier one is not doing well. We need to go figure out how we get better in tier one. And you know, the we're seeing churn with this type of segment, and we need to stop doing that. So that conversation just is impossible to have unless somebody's taking that independent view of the business. And it's too hard for the CEO to bring that, or CFO is in the contract role and trying to get. So that's what I feel like is missing, and probably one of the most important role to have.
So I want to clarify something really quick. So, because some people may take what you said and start deleting all their meetings. So what you're saying, I just want to clarify this.
This alignment, sales and marketing alignment meeting, and who might be getting, they should be deleted. Like, they have no earthly purpose left.
Oh my God.
At all.
Oh my goodness. Hey, some free time for people. But so there's two follow-up questions here. One is, as we all know on this call, finding a good RevOps person is very difficult. So what's the process that you need to take to find someone? Is it internal, external? And then the second question is, are you saying that the marketing and sales alignment meeting should just be go to market with the RevOps there to moderate that? I just want to clarify and make sure that everyone knows, okay, this is the next steps.
Yeah. The second part of it is we need to have internal meetings, but that meeting is about clarity, alignment, and team, but not a sales and marketing alignment, because that's what it boils down to. And that is at what Elin and Trinity, you've been talking about at the leadership level, where it's the same team. But it has to be run and facilitated by an independent person who is not aligned to and have allegiance to your marketing or sales team, because that's when we all know we can make the numbers look any way we want, folks, right? Like, we can go into a spreadsheet and make it look very different way. So you need somebody who doesn't have anything to do to make sales look better or marketing look. They just have to have a business instinct and stuff. So that's one. Two, the person is really good that I have found in many ways are people who they obviously need to understand the math around stuff, because you have to start running and understanding that, because you typically you're gonna make business decision on it. But the most amazing people that I've seen in this role, and Madeline Lee, that I've, you know, Morgan, you and I have worked at Terminus, is one of them, is these people are not necessarily a marketing or sales or CS or product or anything like that. They just have a business mind about them. They're just looking at it in a way it's like, yeah, I know enough about everything. I'm not expert at anything. But I have a business mind. I feel like that's people in RevOps will end up becoming the next CEOs in organizations in the future, because they are going to have that level of the only other person next to the CEO who and maybe a slightly CFO who should have the full understanding of the business, and we all should learn and aspire to have, but day in and day out, just full understanding is, I feel, is a lot of times happens to me DevOps.
Yeah. And Trish, were you going to say something there? I know you were.
I think it was just about the GTM alignment meeting when Sangram started. I'm like, oh no, because we do have a weekly meeting, but it's not, now that I understand what you mean. So it's not a sales and marketing alignment. It's called GTM alignment, and it has sales, marketing, RevOps, and CSM.
There you go.
Real it's part fun. Of it too. So
do you understand like, my beef with that?
I'm like, oh, thank God, I didn't have to redo all this.
You can keep the meeting.
Oh my God, we spent like 6 months trying to like redo it because I'm like, it's good to bring everyone together, and it's the leadership and the frontline managers too.
I totally agree with that, and I think what one thing I did in one of my previous companies is we actually had working groups. So when we had like bigger like go-to-markets, we actually created working groups, including the stakeholders from all the functions that Trinity just mentioned. And that cuts across the entire organization. And then there's usually a facilitator, leader person with the RevOps team in there, right? To kind of guide and ensure we're all moving in the right direction. And then once we've actually figured out a plan, then the go-to-market, so then the working group becomes part of like a executing team, right? To actually now do it and operationalize it through like our normal sort of daily operations. But I think that really helped everybody focus because, you know, everyone gets really busy and you're just like, you're watching your numbers for next week, your pipeline numbers and everything. So you may not think medium, long term about like go to market. So that has been really helpful in my experience.
So we're mentioning this a lot, right? We've now decided, right? This is the go to market alignment meeting, right? I'm glad we clarified that and, you know, we're good. But we've mentioned pipeline numbers. We've mentioned knowing the math. So obviously metrics are a key factor here. So this is all for all of you here is, from your perspective, we have the product marketing lens. We also have from the CMO lens. And Trini, we can start with you on this. How are you looking at the metrics to understand, okay, what am I being tracked on in this go-to-market collective so we're all on the same page and we're not pointing fingers?
So we have dashboards and a massive Google Sheet that so our RevOps, and we do have a fractional CRO who's a phenomenal operations-minded leader, so that we all look at the same metrics, and it's being put together by a neutral party, not sales or marketing. So everything Sangram said. So we look at all of the metrics together every week and update and see are we off pace or not. One thing I've been doing here, and I hope we can continue this way, is so I'm a little bit crazy on the alignment piece because I think if alignment breaks, you might move faster, but you won't go far. So whoever that owns, like say, stage zero number also owns the conversion to the next stage, even though they don't own the stage one. So like, for example, demand owns stage zero volume, but also conversion to one. And then one is like SDR territory, but then two is AE, right? So like, so SDR leader owns the stage one volume, but then also owns a conversion to stage two, even though they don't really influence the AE. It's crazy. I hope it can continue. Sangram, maybe you can Slack me afterward and tell me I'm crazy. it does create a lot of friction, right? Like
you are crazy, so let's continue.
Yes. All right, Sangram, controversy here it comes.
No, I know it's crazy because like, as like for some of my SDR leader be like, well, I can get my team to make sure we deliver the volume as qualified as possible, and we have all the qualification criteria. I can't really tell the AEs what to do, and I can like Slack them, but it's not my team, right? I'm like, I know it's crazy, but let's see how far we can push it. Again, we're a startup, so I'm gonna push the limit as far as we can. At some point, someone's gonna tell me crazy, like today, Sangram tell me I'm crazy, and we're gonna change it.
SDR leader is gonna lose their mind.
I know, but like, that's the beauty of it though, because when it works when you're small, you care about the stuff that you pass over the fence. Like part of my comm is tied to revenue, not lead, you know? So there's that piece. And then even like the demand gen person, like stage zero, part of his comm also tied to stage two. So there's a lot of model thing, not the best thing I don't recommend to everyone, but I want to see how far we can push this.
I'll just say something. I want to hear, Elin, this happened like a week ago or so. a CEO of a company called and said, hey, there's a problem with our business. And I'm like, yeah, let's talk about that. And as part of what we do as research advisory, but he's like, well, our SDR is more making more money than the AE. And I'm like, let me just get this straight. When you start thinking through the math around that, if your SDRs are making more money than your AE, that means your whole criteria to turn deals into, or initial contacts into pipeline is working, but clearly they're not the right people. Clearly the AE don't want to work on them, and SDRs have figured out a way to hack the system, and they're just burning cash like crazy. But it took him 6 months to figure out the game that was going on this thing. So I think it's like, again, it's one of those things that we have to like just burn down the ships on some of these things. It's like, no, your SDR, they can't make more money than the AE. Like, it's just mathematically, your business fundamentals are not going to work if that starts happening. But the flip side has been really, really interesting. The same week, I had another call with another CEO where their entire compensation for the executive team is completely tied to revenue. No small numbers or percentage, like completely. Meaning a marketer, let's say a marketer is making 100K. So they're saying, well, you're going to make 60K from now on, or maybe even close to 70, but 30K. Or 40K or 50K or almost the same amount of money if we as a company hit the number. So they're not having a 10% bonus, like a, you know, like just a little bit. It's like almost 40% bonus if you hit it. And they're the whole PE firm and they're like, this is crazy. Nobody's doing that. In about 1 year, they have completely shifted, and he doesn't have to have another alignment meeting because, you know what, they're already aligned into making 50% of their salaries in it. So compensation is a great way to do it and how it works. But both of those conversations happened last week, and I'm like blown away with that.
Wow. That's so interesting. I'm learning so much from just hearing you guys talk about Evolve Trinity and Tangra, sharing some ideas, honestly, I haven't thought too much about. I guess from my product marketing perspective, gosh, this is like one of the hardest things to do in product marketing. And maybe you can chime in, Trinity, real quick, because I've had the hardest time trying to tie results, right, to PMM work because of the exact same thing we talked about, which is not clear on which team you belong to and not really having any metrics you truly own because you're influencing other people's metrics. So generally what I have done and what I recommend people doing, have been doing, is just really understand the key business objective at any given moment and then making sure your goals ladder up to your main team, which also ladders up to that business objective, right? And sometimes it could be different. So for instance, maybe your business right now is really focused on retention. Like that's more important than acquisition because you're turning customers left and right and something is going on, right? So in which case, that's how you want to be focusing your time on retention efforts, really helping with doing win-loss analysis, exit analysis, or things like that. And then figuring out what can we do from a product marketing perspective. Is it to enable customer success managers, right? To help them save different accounts? Is it to do different anything else, right? To improve that. Maybe another quarter is going to be really focused on top of funnel awareness and driving leads versus pipeline, depending on the business objectives. So when I had my own teams, I always made sure each quarter we have a very clear goal, our primary objective that's laddered up to the main company objective. And then we double down on that and make sure we really hit that, because I think it can be very easy to be stretched thin across every single metric or across the funnel. So that's just my take. And yeah, definitely would love for anybody to jump in.
It makes a lot of sense. PMM has really tricky way of like measuring the impact because it's a lot of like mostly like 100% influence, right?
100%.
So I agree with you, like based on like quarters, kind of like a quarterly OKR, and depending on that, and then tie the incentives to that quarter specifically. So earlier when we talk about like aligning the comp with the revenue, I think that's on the, for the first team, the leadership. But as you kind of like cascade it down, you got to break it down into something where the team feels that they have some influence or control over that. So the morale is a big piece too.
100%. Yeah. And then I always tell my team, ultimately, it's also what other team think of you, right? Because it's so hard to measure and it's about influence. So it's like, if I get other teams pinging me to say, hey, so-and-so on your team has been fantastic. They just helped me win this deal, right? That's not measurable on any dashboard. But I know that and everybody else knows that, right? So that means our team is doing a good job. So I feel like the qualitative side is really important for product marketing success.
Absolutely. And so, hey, Roman, what do you think? Thanks for asking. I've led product marketing team, big companies like SAP, small, high growth companies. And, you know, again, understanding that the GTM is a team sport and product marketing is a key driver of that team sport. For me, it's like the center midfielder. Morgan, to your analogy about soccer earlier, if we are the center mid of the team, the footy team, let's be clear, it's not soccer, it's footy, then we have to interlock with defense, offense, wingers. So who does that mean for us? Or product management. Product managers at a SaaS company, in my opinion, 100% should be like the brand manager of Tide Detergent at Procter & Gamble. That brand manager at Tide Detergent owns the number for that detergent in their region. They're spending maybe 2% of their time on that sexy commercial with the beautiful, you know, family. The majority of their time is they're a business driver. Sangram, to your point, you said, don't just market the biz, understand the business of marketing is beautiful. So with your product manager, you got to co-own the health of your product revenue, your market share against your top three, top four competitors. So that's the interlock metrics with your product manager. You go downstream and you're working with demand generation. You know, Trinity, you touched on this from a lead funnel to pipe. We are co-owning those numbers and the conversion of them, because if we're creating the messaging and the content that is helping those campaigns bring in those quality leads, not just volume of leads, then we should be tracking towards that and co-own that with enablement. How are we giving them the conversations that sales needs to win? How are we helping them train and enable the enablers? And then with sales, just, you know, through the stages, what are we doing with them at each stage from S0 all the way through? Different message for different stages, different content, help the acceleration. So we need to own the win rates, Yilin, to your point. So there's this strategic bucket up top with product management, and then there's this tactical bucket, more the leading indicators versus the lagging indicators. Have those two buckets at your disposal, co-own them with your key stakeholders, and this is how we then can win together as a team. And Yilin, I love what you said about stakeholder management. I've actually instituted something called the SNPS, Stakeholder NPS Score. So quarterly, we do a quantitative and qualitative. That we meet our SLAs with you, product management, in spite of you tossing, products over the wall and saying next Friday, go launch that. Do we meet your SLAs? Do we meet our SLA with demand gen, with enablement, with sales, with customer success, with, you know, Sangram RevOps as well as a key? So have that NPS score beyond the, do you like working with me? Like make it quantitative and qualitative. So no subjective bullshit. And performance reviews are actually tied to that SNPS on my team. So
me. I think that was that was great.
I love how did I forget Rowan is the product marketer here? Like,
it's fine. I don't know who asked the question, but I'm grateful that they asked me that question. But all right, folks, we are almost at time. I would love to do around the horn one key takeaway that people can actionably go and do come Monday morning with regards to GTM at their organization. I'll leave it to you guys as to who wants to go first.
I'm happy to go. Let's start there. Kill the meetings that you don't need to have, especially that it's sales marketing, that it's functional meetings, and turn that into go-to-market meeting. Like words, names have power in it, and get somebody who could make sure that meeting is actually the most productive meeting from the input perspective. Because if it's not, then it becomes more of like, well, here's what I did, and oh, what did you do this week? Like, that's not the meeting that you want a meeting.
I'll jump in. We had a question earlier, so I think I'll use the answer for the first thing you can do. I think one of the questions is, how often, when's a good time for GTM decision makers to get together and go through like the review the GTM strategy and having all this data, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think it's an overnight thing, but I highly recommend team kind of like go back to see if you can kind of create a dashboard of all the key metrics. If you're a product marketer, and we talked about like monitoring your ICP mix, your persona mix, just build out a few charts of saying like, what is the ICP versus non-ICP demo request? ICP versus non-ICP stage zero, stage one, stage two, just to see if it, and track that over time, just to see if it changes over time, because that's an indicator of like what's going on in the market. I think that's an easy way just to kind of, as a product marketer, to know what's going on and in your pipeline. And yeah, I think that's probably, hopefully it's an easy pitch.
Well said, Trin. Well said. And then we had two.
So I was like, Trinity, you said what I was going to say. I wrote as a product marketer, it's just map how the go-to-market process for your company. Like literally start with that. Because I've worked with quite a few of them. I just think, and it's not no fault of anybody's, right? It's just sometimes as a product marketer, we can't get in the weeds too much. We're like, wait, let's check our box. Did we do position and messaging? Did we do this launch? Did we do this enablement? But it goes beyond that, right? It's what's the linkage of all of the stuff you're doing to the business? So literally taking a piece of paper and map out the go-to-market process from research insights all the way to the end, you know, like campaigns and metrics and all that. And then also map out each team within the company that respond to each step, see maybe if there's any gaps, right? And then figure, okay, well, is there a way to even potentially close this gap? Even if you don't have an answer, that's something you want to inquire and figure out, because that just trains your mind to think from a business perspective versus just like purely like your own silo. So I think then you can do what you said, Trinity. I think that's amazing, is to attach numbers and understanding metrics on top of that as well.
Beautiful. And then there was one, and Morgan, you can't just say marketing, listen to sales and do whatever they tell you to do. That cannot be your ultimate win. I won't look for your time.
I've been writing down the entire time. It's just been the same thing over and over again, is that like, just listen to sales, y'all. Like everything else, like that's what you should do. I love what everyone said. I think one of the things that I love, Sangram, you talked about what I wrote down here is CEO owns vision, culture, go to market, right? So I think for everyone that's a stakeholder is emailing, texting your CEO and saying, how am I supporting your vision with our go-to-market motion right now within the function that you're doing? And then how do you make sure that you find that RevOps person to keep everyone accountable, right? And that's what like the cornerstone that I got out of today, because to your point, what everyone said, the math, right? We got to make sure it's there. And the RevOps person will keep someone accountable. So the sales leader isn't like, y'all should listen to me because you know what's going to happen.
Well, the RevOps person should be a salesperson, and that way you get what you want.
Fair play.
Yilin, Trinity, Sangram, Morgan, my guy, thank you so much for being here, especially on the first episode of the Revamp Market Tech. Blessed to call you guys friends, and thank you for lending us your time and insights. Till next time, have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, see everybody.
Take care. From here, it only can go up. Ha 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 ha